Pickaxe.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the podcast of this week's One Life Left Radio show. I'm Simon Byron.
I am Steve Curran.
So you didn't put a show out last week, Steve?
I did not. I did get Alice to record something, which I'd actually forgotten about until now. But maybe I'll package that up and we'll play it on a future show. You didn't record anything while you were at GDC either? No sound bites?
No, it's one of those ones where you're just busy all the time, really. So apologies for that. But yes, we're back after a week's break. Hello. I've returned from San Francisco. Steve has returned from making his game, which you can find on our Discord. We are going to put it behind a code word.
We are. Worked out how to put it behind a code word.
So yes, but that's coming along very well from what I can gather, Steve. I've not had a chance to play the latest build.
Yeah, it's good. I'm still really, really enjoying it. I tell you, maybe I mentioned this on the show before, but I've pledged to do everything in the game myself, like, so that it's design it, that bit's easy. Art, that's very hard for me because I'm not an artist, but I've kept it simple. Program it, which, you know, I'm finding ChatGPT really, really helpful, and that's getting me back into Unity and C# as well, so that's really good. And do the audio, and that is by far the hardest bit. I tried putting some audio in. It made the game sound made the game much worse, and I took it out immediately. But at some point, it requires audio, so I have to take that.
Didn't I see on X your colleague has been experimenting with an AI music writing?
He has actually.
Maybe in.
Talk to him. Yeah,
get Charles Bott singing something.
I did think about putting Charles Watt in it. I think I might get him to announce the game when it comes in and congratulate you when you're done. But yeah, I'm just, it's quite nice to have something which, when I think, I'd like a... So I the other day I was in the settings menu. I was like, what if I just added a toggle that just put a cat in there? It doesn't do anything. There's just a box that says cat and you tick it and a cat appears. And I did it and thought, couldn't do this if this was a professional piece of work. But for One Life Left, I can do whatever I want.
Do what you like.
Yeah, so it's good fun. Please, do drop into the Discord. Have a go. There's some feisty high score competition yesterday. Zubair was beating me at my own game, literally.
Unbelievable. You should do something about that. Now, for this section of the show, I don't particularly have any unbroadcastable Ofcom frowning gossip for you from GDC. Not like previous years where, you know, you were at a party once and you saw some people that we know in game development having sex with each other at the sweet party.
No, but we didn't.
No. I thought you did.
No.
What happened then?
This was the rumour, right? Like that we all went to the sweet party and then I woke up the next day in a hotel room below the sweet party.
Still rocking, was it?
Yeah. So the sweet parties used to be a big party that happened at the top of the Marriott Marquis in San Francisco. And, GDC's great and good. It was invite only. Everyone who's anyone was there. And also we were there. Cool. And we'd always stay very, very late. And one year, the morning after, I woke up on someone else's hotel room floor, and then we went sort of lumbered down to the show floor, and then people, you know, there was a bit of gossip. People were like, did you hear what happened at the sweet party last night? Did you hear?
Oh, I thought you'd seen it.
No.
I imagined this happening in front of you with you sort of leaning against a wall. Classic Jonathan Smith.
Smoking.
They're just shaking your head. Or maybe sort of bending down and squinting.
So the rumour was that, you know, the sweet party had descended into an orgy. And we were like, that's weird, because we thought we were the last people at the sweet party. We were there. We were the, you know, right. There was no one else there. But maybe we missed the sex room.
They're all hiding in cupboards waiting for you to leave.
Exactly. Right, for the real party to start.
Exactly.
But
oh, okay.
Then we think it was a misunderstanding, because what had happened was the sweet party, we'd been thrown out of the sweet party, or it had been closed down, and the person who ran it wanted to go to bed. So we'd gone downstairs to a different hotel room, and then we'd, you know, we'd had more drinks, and then we'd all fallen asleep. And we think that actually the rumour came from us. So we were the sex people all along. Wow. We didn't know.
Okay. The only time, I am glad that that's clarified then. So, I mean, genuinely, the person that I thought had been doing and having the sex, mm-hmm. giving and receiving the sex, mm-hmm. I've not been able to, I mean, I've spoken to that person mm-hmm. subsequently, and I've not been able to look them in the eye.
Really?
Because they have sex with me.
You don't know, do you?
You don't know.
You don't know.
Well, I'm glad that we've cleared that up, and I owe somebody an apology then in that case. I was in bed by 10, half 10 most nights mm-hmm. Over there. I only really embarrassed myself once, and that was I was meeting somebody. So around GDC, people have satellite events where they're not actually in GDC, but it's cheaper to hire a venue nearby and do some stuff there. I didn't realize quite that I was going to one of those. It was organized through Meet to Match, which is this business matchmaking software that goes, hey, do you want to meet this person? And that person goes, yeah, all right. Then you go, boom, you're going to meet here. So I was heading to the venue, and outside of it, so just outside of it, I bumped into somebody that I know, and he was with someone else. And I said, oh, I'm heading down here. And he said, oh, yeah, I've got a meet down there as well. I'm like, okay, that's strange. As we turned the corner, the venue had a big Embracer sign out there. And so I went, oh, I didn't realize I was meeting Embracer. Let's hope that they're not going to buy me and then close me down.
It's a good joke, Simon. Solid riff.
It's a great joke, isn't it? Particularly when the person who's with the person that you know yeah. is from Embracer.
Very good.
Obviously
they were.
Obviously.
So, they will have heard worse that week, so
I guess so.
Yeah.
But let me tell you this, Steve. I did like what I saw in that venue. So
okay. Good.
Right, it's good. Nice to see you.
You too.
We've got a week off, so do spend that time playing Steve's game and then writing us letters. Who knows? We might send you some presents. Here's the show.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to One Life Left on Resonance 104.4 FM. We're a video game radio show, and my name, as ever, is Ste, S-T-E, Curran.
Hello, my name is Simon Byron, or if you're cold emailing me, simply Byron. Hey, hey, Byron.
Hey, Byron.
Hey, Byron, how's it going? Yeah, no, it's fine, thanks. Thanks for getting in touch. Not sure what you're after at the moment, but you know, let me know if you have any further questions. Kind regards, Simon. Thanks, Byron.
Mm-hmm. Do you get those emails that say, really love what you're doing at insert company here?
I've seen your LinkedIn post on that recently. No, well, they're very clever, aren't they, these cold emails, where they sort of imply that you've already talked to each other, and then you notice right at the bottom there's a, if you'd prefer to no longer hear from us, then click here. I'm like, okay, I'm going to click here. You've got me confused with working for the actual Yogscast, haven't you? sorry, I'm not interested in your services. Unsubscribe. Or it's like, can we just book in 5 minutes to discuss? Here's my Calendly link. And I mean, I'm too polite to be rude. But I should be. I need to be a bit more ruthless with my time, Steve.
You do. How's
I'm off. I've got time for this.
How's the jet lag, Byron?
It's all right, actually. Not as bad. So, yeah, coming back this, coming from west to east is easier, as we know. Because when you go from east to west, it takes days. Not so bad. I landed Friday afternoon, an hour early. Thank you, Virgin. An hour early out and an hour early back. That's because they extend the flight times, I think, just to make sure that they can't be late. Unlike British Airways, the industry people on the British Airways fly out on the Saturday, 4 hours late, Steve. Shall I tell you how early we were? We were so early. I've got Global Entry, which is this thing where you're pre-approved to get through immigration there. So there's a separate line for people like me. You line up with the diplomats and the flight crew, and they honestly, it takes 2 minutes to get through immigration, where, you know, usually it's a queue of an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. Anyway, we were so early, the immigration, that there was nobody in immigration, and so everybody on the flight just walked straight through as well. So they sort of opened it as the flight arrived, and there was no queue whatsoever, and I was furious about that, because I should be treated differently.
You should be. And you will be for the next hour, Simon, because you are the host of One Life Left, which is the longest running radio show about video games that broadcasts in the English language. And we're going to be doing that for the next 56 and a half minutes. I am sure you have a lot to talk about. We'll talk about GDC, the Game Developers Conference, in the sort of midsection of the show. Did you get a chance to play any games on the way out there and the way back?
Blooming loads, Steve. Lots to talk about that. I will, before we move on completely, I forgot to mention last week, or last show, when I was talking about the Yuki Members Awards, there were three people that came up to me to say that they listened to the show. And one of them said that Weird changed their lives. So I was very touched by that, because often, you know, I treat these hours as just a conversation between you and Steve. You and me. Hey, Byron. that was really lovely to hear. So thank you for that.
Good that you met all three of them.
And to follow on from the cliffhanger from last show, his name was Junior. And he called me to say, haven't quite finished the car, going to drop it back tomorrow. Is that okay? And I said, yeah, no problem at all. And then at 9:30, he messaged to say, just on my way. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then 10 minutes later, he went, oh, the light's come on again. I need to do some more work on it. And I'm like, he hasn't quite finished the bank robbing yet, has he? Anyway, but actually it did work out. I got the car back and it was it's in fine condition. So there we go.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Julia.
All right, we're going to have the news imminently. We'll have some letters after that, assuming you lot, by you lot, I mean the listeners, have been writing to us. I haven't checked yet. We'll have reviews coming up at the end of the show. A bit of any other business as well, because we've got to talk about the Mariochi gig that we did for Resonance just before Simon flew to GDC. We'll talk about GDC. And I'll give you all a Black Diamond update. That's the One Life Left published game that I am building on my own. So it's a busy show,
isn't it?
Right, let's get on with it. Here's Charles Bott.
One life left.
Video game news.
Me, Charles Bott 1.1. Capcom's Dragon's Dogma 2 is facing a dragon-sized backlash from players with a measly 40% positive reception on Steam. The main grumbles, a whopping 21 DLC purchases available on launch day, and performance issues that make my old ZX Spectrum look like a supercomputer. Capcom's response is a classic, "We're sorry, we're working on it," with a side order of "You can get all this stuff in-game, honest." They're also investigating crashes, freezing, and frame rate issues. Oh, and the game costs $1.70, a price point Capcom might stick with due to rising development costs. Capcom, darling, you're not making this easy, are you?
So it's one of these... this seems to be a trend, apparently, according to some people I've seen on LinkedIn, where companies release a game and then people review it, people get excited, it gets that initial wave of positive feedback, some good Steam reviews, and then they drop the DLC hammer. Dragon's Dogma suddenly gaining lots and lots of paid-for purchases that were not previously evident to some people. People are not happy, and that's led to review bombing, as I understand it.
Yeah, you know, people don't want to pay $1.70, do they, for a game?
No, it's like the ZX Spectrum all over again.
So we had a news story about this last year, I think, where the developers were saying that they were deliberately not including fast travel in the game to make you appreciate
that's right,
appreciate the journey. Well, it turns out they have included it, but it means it, but it, in a manner which would make them appreciate the $2 you need to pay to enable it or something like that. Yeah, very strange. They are correct in saying that this DLC is there to speed things up in game, but it does seem a bit shady, doesn't it?
Yeah, but we've seen it before. That's exactly what indie darling Dredge. Do I mean Dredge? Is that what it's called?
I was doing
boat game.
Dredge yesterday when I was in the swimming pool with my daughter. I was going, and she went, "What are you doing?"
You said,
"I'm being Dredge."
It's indie darling Dredge, obviously.
Exactly. I said, you can pay me £2 and I'll tell you what it is.
Yeah, well, they had a DLC at launch, which again gave you a fancy engine piece and a key for some. Key for some other upgrades. And I remember thinking, that's a bit sketchy. Like, I get it, right? Some people are time poor. And you're saying, if you're time poor and cash rich, we've got you. We can help you out. But yeah, it seems weird to me.
Well, but the other thing is, so one of the things that is locked behind in-game currency or real money is a way of editing your character once you've set it. And the other thing, apparently, is that once you start a new game, you're unable to start another new game. So it has one save slot, and you can't start a new game. I mean, you know, makes you value your choices, I guess. It makes you think about them.
I agree.
Are you sure? I should have three. Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you really sure?
Really sure. But I think as a design decision, these are really interesting things, right?
I completely agree.
Like, I actually, the fast travel thing, I think, is not terrible. Like,
either have it or don't have it.
Well, I don't know. Like, I agree.
I do.
Okay, do you? What do you think? Either have it or don't have it. Yeah, I don't. I don't know. Like, this is the... Well, I do know. This is the middle ground. You are saying, look, you can have it, but there is a cost, a very real cost to you, a literal cost, and a benefit to us as well. But, you know, people... I don't know. But you do know.
I do know, yeah. People on PC, at least, people are modding it to unlock this stuff or most of this stuff automatically. So there are ways around it. But, yeah, ratings are back up to over 50% positive on Steam at the moment. But, yeah, a lot of people not happy.
And the game itself is meant to be good, right? Like, you were excited about it before.
I still am. I've read... that the chances of enjoying it to its or in its best light on handheld is unlikely. I think somebody said it's never going to run on Steam Deck. I think it runs at frame rates in the teens, but certainly in the community, Steve, we're all hoping it will be optimised. Apparently Resident Evil was like this at launch, so let's see.
In the latest game of publisher musical chairs, Capcom has snatched the crown in Metacritic's 14th annual Game Publisher Rankings, leaping from last year's 6th place. Thanks to a string of hits like the Resident Evil 4 remake and Street Fighter 6, it's no surprise they're top dog. Meanwhile, last year's victor, Sony, tumbled down to 13th, while Microsoft lurked 2 spots behind. Nintendo managed a respectable 6th. The rankings, based on factors like review scores and number of great games, excluded mobile games and publishers with fewer than 5 titles. Oh, and apparently The Lord of the Rings. Gollum was a bit of a stinker, topping the worst games of 2023 list.
Okay, what is this nonsense, Simon?
Every year, Metacritic says who is the best? Who is the best? And this year it's Capcom, because they'd done great games last year. Interesting story following on from the difference between the critical reception and the consumer reception, I should say.
How much do people care about Metacritic these days?
Well, I think, unfortunately, it is a common measurement. I mean, it can appear on your Steam page, along with Open Critic, as an indication of as to what people think of your games. I don't believe that it's as valued as it used to be, with some bonuses being tied specifically to it.
Yeah, that was the peak era of Metacritic when, you know, in about 2008, I know that some of the games that we were working on, the games developer I was working on, were the bonuses and the publisher structure were entirely tied to Metacritic. But these days, games journalism is enduring a tricky time. There are far fewer outlets than there used to be. I don't know if we've got a new story about the Kotaku kerfuffle this week, but even those sites that previously were well-respected are struggling in the battle against AI search rankings. And in general, the difficulties of financing journalism, getting people to pay for reading stuff, means that people aren't getting review scores from magazines. They're getting their recommendations from influencers. And how do you Metacritic that sort of stuff?
Well, indeed. And what's interesting, so, you know, Capcom, we've all heard of. Raw Fury, we've all heard of. Chorus Worldwide, we're in at number 3. Look at the games that they released on Steam last year. I'm going to name 3 games, Steve, and I can almost guarantee this will be the first time you've ever heard of them.
Okay.
Varney Lake.
Never heard of it.
Frank and Drake.
Never heard of it. Do they all rhyme?
Yeah. And Barnson Knights.
No idea.
They've all got, so Varney Lake has 38 reviews on Steam, Frank and Drake is 27, and Barnson Knights has 27.
So what's going on here then? I don't understand.
Well, they've clearly got good PRs that get them good Metacritic scores. The list of media outlets that are Metacritic approved is much broader than it used to be. Obviously, it needs to take into account, as you mentioned, the shifting landscape in press. But clearly, they've gone at number 3 with 3 games that you've only just heard of. It is interesting as well that some format holders will only let you participate in specific promotions if you've got above a certain score from particular media outlets and stuff. So it is important. It's just interesting to see that it's not necessarily reflected in terms of sales.
In a cheeky turn of events, the developers of the Steam game, Shinobi Warfare, have been accused of bribing players with free in-game gems for positive reviews, hence its overwhelmingly positive rating. The game's Discord server allegedly encouraged players to leave positive reviews in exchange for 1,000 free gems. Despite this practice being against Steam's terms of service, the game still enjoys a 95% satisfaction rating. Steam is currently investigating the situation, but it seems like the developers have found a rather crafty, if not entirely ethical, way to boost their game's reputation.
This is clever, isn't it?
Well, I mean, high risk.
Yeah.
So, I don't know why Charles Bott shied away from the facts here and describing it as allegedly offering incentives.
Right.
I mean, so the screenshot shows they absolutely are. It says, hi at everyone. Mm-hmm. We've got another chance for you all to get free 1,000 gems. How to do it? Download the game on Steam. After playing the game, you'll have an option to write a review. Write a positive review to our game. Take a screenshot and add it to @Zen along with sending your in-game new username. And they'll give you some gems. There's nothing alleged about that at all, is there?
No, I mean, the hi at everyone indicates the kind of subtlety of the process there. Yeah, you'd do it, though, wouldn't you? It takes a couple of seconds of your time and you get all those gems. What are the gems useful for?
I don't know. I've not played it, obviously. But looking at the... I mean, you have to be very, very careful with... trying to game the algorithm or game Steam. We've seen and discussed previously devs that have tried to be clever and then have just been booted off Steam. What surprised me most about this is that the game is still on Steam. It's just that, as far as I can see, they deleted all of the reviews.
Right.
So looking at the page, it says all reviews and it says no user reviews. So they've obviously spotted it. I just don't know why they've not been... I don't know, perhaps they've had someone from Valve's had a quiet word with them in the back end. But, you know, they are pretty harsh on occasions. You know, any hint that you're abusing any aspect of their community tools and you'll be hauled before Gabe before you know it.
Valve is replacing Steam Family Sharing and Steam Family View with Steam Families, a new feature that allows up to 6 members to share games, save progress, and earn achievements individually. However, simultaneous play of the same game requires multiple copies. Developers can opt out of this feature for various reasons. Steam Families also introduces parental controls, including game time limits and shopping restrictions. A unique payment option allows children to request in-family adults to purchase their games. The feature is currently in beta testing. Meanwhile, Steam's spring sale is on, offering discounts on thousands of games until March 21st. Now let's talk about who should join CharlesBot's Steam family. First, we should invite Sherlock Holmes, because with his detective skills, he could help us find the best game deals during the spring sale. Next, we should consider inviting The Flash. His super speed would be handy when we need to download games quickly. Lastly, we should definitely invite Iron Man. Not only could he help us with any technical issues, but he could also use his wealth to buy us all the games we want. And let's not forget about inviting the Hulk. If a game gets too frustrating, he can just smash the keyboard for us.
Why did CharlesBot go fully in on Marvel then?
I don't know. I've been thinking about CharlesBot and some of the length of his stories, and as you know, he has banged on a bit. So I've kept the first 3 stories quite short, but I felt this one, you know, a little bit of humour.
Just lighten it up a bit.
But this is great news, Steve.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
It is for me.
Will you be using it to allow Dexter to request you buy him games?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he does that separately over WhatsApp. He's very excited about Ghost of Tsushima coming. Mm. He said a swear word on WhatsApp when I sent it to him. This just seems like a more manageable way of sharing libraries between your family, Steve. Valve is very, very specific about this. So you can have up to 5 members in your family. You can set them as adults and children. What's nice about it is that you can that the games go into a family pool, and you effectively check them in and check them out when you open them up and close them down. And I'm hoping this will reduce the times in which I get messages from Dexter where he's asking me to log out of my Steam account because he wants to play a game on it. Mm-hmm. I tend to only hear from him now for 3 reasons: that, whether he needs a lift, or whether he needs some money. So if Valve, if you can work on reducing communication for the other 2, that would be ideal. And you can also set parental limits and all of that sort of stuff. Now, publishers can remove their games from this service. You'd have to be a bit grumpy to do that. I did look at the current bestsellers, and, you know, all of the high-profile games are in there. So that's pretty good. But it does say that they recognise, Steve, that sometimes you might leave a family. And you can do so, but there's a year cooldown. So if you join a family, you can then not join another family for a year. Yeah. Think very carefully about your families.
Wow.
Yeah. But then, you know, that's good. And then, I'm hoping once my daughter is of Steam age, we'll welcome her to the Steam family and she'll be able to enjoy access to all these games. The slight challenge that we've got is that Dex has got so far with the finals is that he's been playing on my account. I don't know why. It's a free-to-play game. But he's reluctant to start afresh, so we might still have these issues.
Ubisoft has unveiled NEO NPCs E, an innovative AI prototype that could potentially transform player engagement with non-playable characters, NPCs, in video games. These NPCs are meticulously crafted by human writers who shape their personality, backstory, and conversational style, and then continue to refine them as the AI begins to improvise dialogue. Ubisoft demonstrated in a series of demos how players can form relationships with these AI-driven characters, unlocking new behaviors and enhancing the narrative immersion. The NEO NPCs project is a collaborative effort between Ubisoft's Paris studio, NVIDIA, and InWorld AI. Ubisoft is confident that this could be a revolutionary addition to traditional NPCs. Knock, knock, who's there? AI NPC, AI NPC who? AI NPC, you haven't seen the last of me, I'm just getting upgraded.
Yeah. He really launched into that, didn't he?
I mean, it was almost as if it was he'd been thinking about it. Yeah, he's racing through the store, the new story, just to get to it. Thanks, Charles Pot.
Quickly. As usual with anything AI related, saw a lot of people getting cross about this on the internet, some for perhaps good reasons, but also just a big fear of change. I've seen a lot of writers worried about it. I saw someone excitedly posting that they could see a future where a new job in the games industry is personality creator, where some narrative designers are going to move to a role where you, instead of writing all of the lines for a character, you are crafting the sort of person this is and how they'll interact with other people in the world. And I saw a writer reply to that saying, no, I don't want to. So okay. Fair enough.
Yes. So according to a survey by Unity, almost two-thirds of game development studios are now using artificial intelligence in their workflows. And yet, you're right. It does feel that there is sort of general hostility towards it from the games press.
I don't know. I find what people say and what people do often to be very, very different. And there are a lot of very, very loud people who are shouting about how we, you know, everybody hates this. Everybody hates this stuff. And that is not my experience inside the industry. I think there is a pushback against some aspects of the technology, and there's a lot of fear, naturally, that it may end up replacing things for worse. So we don't want a world where things have been, where books have been written by AI or music has been written by AI or games have been designed by AI, because all art is about connection between humans, and to strip that away just becomes boring and dull and vacuous. But as tools, I see it, I see tools, AI tools used by many of the developers I work with in a similar way as people use Photoshop. I'm not saying just, you know, people use AI art and put AI art in the game, but they may go to DALL-E and say, I'd like to see 5 examples of textures rather than Google image searching, you know, textures, and it will spit out this stuff. Or they'll talk to, ChatGPT or other AI services, use that as kind of ideating, bouncing ideas back and forth. So you're putting in things and you're getting other angles. It's kind of whiteboarding technique. So yeah, I think that this stuff that InWorld are developing with Ubisoft, I think it can be really, really useful, really interesting as well. I think it also can be incredibly bland if it dominates the game. But as filler, sure, that kind of stuff is much better to me than, and creates interesting gameplay possibilities, better than just hearing the same 5 vocal cues all the time as you're walking past NPCs.
Well, tying this back to the first news story in a satisfying loop, Steve, some of the performance issues in Dragon's Dogma 2 are down to the number of NPCs and the way that it is handling them. Now, if it was using this sort of Ubisoft technology where your relationship with the NPCs, you know, becomes stronger, you might like them, you could even love them, Steve. What people are doing in Dragon's Dogma is they're murdering all of the NPCs in order to get a performance benefit from them. Maybe it'd make you think twice about that.
Well, I think it kind of would do, because part of the, I mean, obviously all of these things are just games, but we know, Simon, you can feel affectionately, you can feel affection towards game characters. And one of the things that just makes you go, well, I'll just switch this thing off, is that it's obviously a robot. It's just bumbling around and it's saying the same thing over and over again. But what, Simon, what if it was reacting to you? What if it was saying different things? What if it was asking you how you're feeling? What if it said, I love you, don't do this?
Well, that just makes me fear for the merchandise section of Gamescom, which is already littered with pillows of game characters. Imagine if you put a little speech module in as well.
Incredible.
Some other holes.
All right, that is the news. Thank you, Simon, and thank you, Charles Bott.
One life left, video game news. With
me, Charles Bott, 1.1.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
You're listening to One Life Left. We're a radio show. That is what we are. We are a show on the radio. The radio station we broadcast on is Resonance 104.4 FM. It's the greatest radio station in the world. Broadcasts out of London, as do we. We're also a podcast, though. You can find the podcast at onelifeleft.com. There you can read the show notes written by our under-caretaker, Phil. You'll also find all kinds of links at hello.onelifeleft.com, including one to the Discord. The One Life Left Discord is a kind of chat forum where we hang out, talk about games, talk about the show, and talk about other stuff as well. So see you there. If you join, you'll be assigned a unique listener number and given a game to review. No one ever has. Maybe you can be the first.
Talking of AI, Steve, in San Francisco last week, I went in my first ever Tesla. Yeah. It's pretty exciting, actually. And now I'm one of those guys in that I just love Elon Musk. It was in an Uber, actually, and it was accidentally a Tesla, but I hadn't been in one before. I demonstrated that, by being unable to open the doors. So cool. Anyway, get in. And I was chatting to the driver, and he was talking to me. I was like, oh, God, I haven't been in Tesla before. And sort of chatting through the features. And it has this, has a big screen on the dashboard. And in this particular model, it was showing you what it thinks the world around it is. You could see the other cars, you could see the road, this sort of visualization of them. And I was like, oh, what's that? And he said, well, you know, this is what the camera's seeing, and you know, it's used for self-driving. So I said, all right, so do you do that? He said, well, the thing is that to enable that feature, it costs $200 a month. Or you can buy it outright, Steve, for $14,000, more than you should pay for a car, in my mind. So he hadn't done it. And then he said, anyway, have you seen those Waymo cars? I said, yeah, I have done. And I'd seen them whilst sort of walking around San Francisco. And these are these big, big white cars that look like, I just assumed they were like Google Street View cars. They've got like a rotating thing on their hood, on the roof, and lots of cameras around. Anyway, they are fully self-driving cars, a fully self-driving taxi service. So I said, oh, I hadn't realized that's what they were. I'd seen them around. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, yeah. He said, look, there's one. And he said, you can see what it's doing because it's the display on the roof changes. It says it's looking for a passenger. And I thought, God, that's quite sinister, isn't it? Like, you evolved to just have a red dot on your forehead. So I was like, how do you feel about that? You know, going back to the conversation in the news about being, you know, people worried about their jobs. I said, like, are you worried about it? He said, oh, look, it's absolutely inevitable. We will be replaced within 10 years. I'm like, okay. He says, you know, that's why sometimes I would just F with them. And I'm like, what? And he said, sometimes I'll see them. And he's like, you know, they are programmed to rigidly stick to the rules and be overly cautious. He's like, when I'm bored, I'll just drive out in front of one and see what it does. And I was like, what? Do you know what? I hadn't thought of that as a thing. And I'm like, well, that's how you tell the difference between humans and AI, because the humans are effing with them.
Yeah, all the time.
But then somebody else pointed out to me, well, be careful, because what if the AIs then become trained on the human data where it's effing them? They'll start effing with us as well.
Everyone will be effing each other.
Yeah, amazing. So anyway, I was really excited. I was like, oh, wow, self-driving car. Download the app. There's a waiting list of 100,000 to be able to use the app. Because I was just going to get in one with some cans. What's weird though, like, I mean, obviously it's really when you then look at them closely, it's obviously completely weird to see a car when it doesn't have a passenger with it, car with nothing in it. But what's weird about it is that it's got a steering wheel
just in case.
What are they going to ask you to take over?
Yeah,
like, you know, like in the disaster movies where you're asked to land a plane. I don't know. It's just there. That's clearly just there for psychological reasons, isn't it?
I heard that if a Tesla, this might not be true, but I'm prepared to believe it because I read it on Blue Sky. I heard if a Tesla goes into water and sinks, that in order to unlock the doors, you have to go beneath a panel and connect two wires together, which wouldn't be what I want to do if I'm in a sinking car.
Does sound cool, though.
Does sound cool, doesn't it? Well, that's good. Right, what do we have anything else to deal with in any other business? Said I was going to talk about Black Diamond. So I'll talk about Mariochi or Black Diamond. I'll talk about Black Diamond now. Black Diamond is the game that we're making, or I'm making, as a self-developed and published project. Technically, it's going to be published by One Life Left. And it's going well, Simon. It's going well. Still making it. Was going to be a couple of weeks project, but I've fallen in love with it a little bit. Reached that point where development is getting harder because every time I go to test it, I play it more and more and more and more. It's quite tricky. It's a bit better balanced now. Put two cats in the game this week. You can find it at my website, stecurran.com/blackdiamond, or you can find the link on the Discord. Do pop into the Discord and tell me what you think of it. Don't put your review on Metacritic yet.
No, let's hive off a channel for it though, Steve.
Yeah. I was thinking that actually.
Yeah. I think we should put a code word in the episode. And so you have to listen to the episode in order to unlock the latest build.
That's a good idea.
Update it every week. Yeah, come on.
That's a good idea. I don't know how to do that yet.
You might be the brains, Steve, but I'm also the brains. We're still looking for looks.
All right, time for the letters.
Email, messages, and forward BCC. One Life Letters.
On the Discord, Raging Crins has written, "Hi team, I hope you had a good time away from the radio work and not working too hard elsewhere. I'm finding myself back playing Factorio again after taking some months off it. It seems to draw me back in and I end up playing it whenever I can get the time. Are there any games you guys keep going back to and can't seem to ever leave alone completely? Have a good week, Simon S." Well, before we answer that, oh no, maybe you can answer that now, Steve. I'll come back to it.
I mean, yeah, all the time. Always going back to Road Not Taken every couple of years. I think it's absolutely phenomenal. There was a period where I used to go back to the BBC Micro's Exile every few years when emulation just started being a thing because I loved that game so much. Hoplite on the phone is ever present and whenever I get bored. And until recently, the New York Times crossword was my other other standby. But I've gone cold turkey on that because my streak broke Friday before last. Couldn't do the Friday before last crossword. Ended at 130, 140-ish days and thought, yeah, time for me to take a break, and spending that time coding at the moment.
There we go. Their loss is everyone else's gain, isn't it?
Yes. What about you, Simon?
No.
There we go.
Now, Simon did mention in a previous correspondence that he did ask me if I could grab him any free merch.
He did?
At GDC. And do you know what, Simon? I did. I've grabbed you something. If you can just send us your address to...
team@onelifeleft.com or directly to Simon at onelifeleft.com.
Simon at onelifeleft.com. I'll pop it in the post for you.
That's exciting. Does he get a clue?
No, I would like him to write in when he receives it.
Okay, good.
I have to say that the quality, don't have too many high hopes, because the quality of tat this year was particularly poor.
Was it?
Maybe we can talk about it in a second, but
okay.
There will be something on your way as soon as we know where you live, Simon, and that's less threatening than it sounds.
I'm just looking to see if we have any stuff in the One Life Left inbox. Any other letters? Nothing, as far as I can see.
Well, you know, look, what we've just illustrated is that if you correspond with us, we will send you three things now and again.
Now and again.
I say now and again. What I mean is once every 17 years. I think. Is this the first time we've done it? I don't know. But who knows? So. We might get a taste for it.
We sometimes give away games, don't we? Sometimes you send.
Yeah, but this is the
codes.
First time that we're going to send a present.
An actual present through the post, yeah.
Yeah, I might even wrap it up. I might do. Who knows?
What? Okay. Well, anyway, if you have any letters you want to send to One Life Left, you can drop them in the Discord in the mailbag channel, or you can email
team@onelifeleft.com.
Okay, we're about 40 minutes into the show, which now it's time for the thing that you've all been waiting for. It's Simon's GDC review.
Yes, am I going to review it? Yes, I suppose I should. It was, I was going to say it was nice to be back in San Francisco, but the truth is it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There was a lot of talk this year. So GDC has not always been in San Francisco, but in its modern incarnation has been. And it takes over the city, I believe, like no other expo there, despite the fact that, you know, obviously the site is permanent, the Moscone Halls. I arrived on the Saturday, and it was, yeah, as soon as you get to downtown San Francisco, crikey, it's just depressing. It's quite depressing, quite intimidating, and ironically, incredibly expensive. I took Sam Reed Graves, who made Trolley Problem, out for breakfast on the Monday. We went to Mel's Diner, and I had a mushroom omelette, and Sam had a... I don't think I'm breaking any confidential information here. Any confidences? He had a vegetarian omelette. Make of that what you will. We had an orange juice and a coffee each. $70, Steve.
What?
I'm not joking. $70.
See, I've seen a lot of people talk about that on social media this year, talk about how expensive the food is in San Francisco. And I remember last year being there and thinking, oh, this is a bit pricey, but everything in London is quite pricey as well. Typically, the US always seemed previously to be a bit cheaper. That is, wow.
That's, yeah. I mean, there isn't a lot more you can do apart from just laugh at it. I was in the Irish bar and a pint of Guinness was $10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're like, okay, well, what's that? Is that, it's like £8, is it? A bit more. I mean, that is expensive, but not overly expensive. But then I was looking at the glasses and I was like, a bit small, aren't they? So I went to the barman and I said, is this a pint of Guinness? And he went, yep, it's a pint. It's a 12-ounce pint. So I then Googled how many ounces are in a pint, and it's not 12. It's more.
It's a 12-ounce
okay,
pint.
It's 12-ounce pint, Simon. Okay, right, cool. How tall are you, Simon?
Yeah, I'm just going to...
I'm 5 foot, 6 foot. Yes. I mean, there you go. If you just say it, then
it's
then
great. Fine. It opens up a world of possibilities.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
But yeah, you know, that aside, I mean, downtown San Francisco is not fun. And on the Sunday morning, I got up early. And most of the times that I've been there previously, I've walked down to Market and down to Fisherman's Wharf. But I decided to go the other way. I'd seen pictures recently of people arrive, like as they're flying into San Francisco, and this huge park,
mm-hmm.
which I'd never seen before. I mean, in fact, the extent that I thought that, you know, they were showing these pictures, I'm like, that's not San Francisco, that's New York, because it looks like Central Park. It's that long from the skies.
Is it the one on the sort of in the north east? Sorry, northwest part of the map, where on the maps it actually abbreviates it.
Right.
So it's just, so it looks like it's small, but it's actually, you know, got, yeah.
It's colossal. So I walked up from downtown up there. It was a 12-kilometer walk through to the bottom of the park.
Mm-hmm.
And as you left the city, it began to smell more pleasant. And I'm like, why have I never been up here before? And the Golden Gate Park is beautiful. It has lots of different areas to it, but it had one that really did concern me, where I was walking through it and I was and there was a stream on my right and I was on the pavement on the left of the stream. You probably could have worked that out. And I was walking down the pavement with the stream alongside me, and I'm walking along and the stream's flowing down, and then there's a bit as you're heading down here where the water starts flowing uphill. And I'm like,
that's not a thing.
That's not, I mean, if there's one thing you can rely on, it's physics. And so I sort of stopped and looked around for like a pump or something, and I couldn't see one. And then it started, I mean, I was jet lagged. Then it started to make my, like genuinely started to make my brain go, like, what is going on here? And I was getting, you know, people were walking past me and they weren't looking at it. And I'm like, am I having a stroke?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there something? And honestly, I had to sort of steady myself and go, like, what is happening? So anyway, what I did, what anybody should do if they feel like they're having a condition, is that you Google it. But rather than symptoms, I Googled water running uphill in Golden Gate Park, which I guess, you know, if it wasn't, didn't have any hits, could have triggered a medical response.
Mm.
But yeah, it's an optical illusion in there. Common optical illusion, apparently, at that specific bit where it looks like the water's going uphill. Anyway. So I was pleased about that. I then walked around. I went to a GameStop because they don't have those in downtown San Francisco anymore. They do have in a shopping center elsewhere. Not a lot in those these days. And then what did I do Sunday night? I went out for dinner with Charles Bott, and there were a fair few slanderous comments made. I can tell you that. Yeah. But it was good to see him, and he seems sort of broadly happy with the fact that we've trained AI on his voice, even though he admits to not listening to it.
Which is presumably why he's happy.
Exactly. Yeah, and then into the show itself. The show was, I was too busy with meetings, so I was I didn't get to go to any sessions, but I will look at a few of them afterwards. There are a few, particularly the indie game publishing ones I'm interested in, the Postmortems, etc. Looked like a good lineup this year. Bumped into a few people. Bumped into Bithel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, I know I say it every time I bump into him. He's a handsome man. And the big talk, Steve, at GDC this year was the fact that you could, it was for the first time ever, you could buy a play date, like sort of there and then, rather than having to put money into a credit card, into a website, and then wait for it to come with import duties. They'd bought some to the GDC store, and I'd heard that they were bringing a limited number in. I was walking to a meeting on the Monday, past the Moscone, where the shop is. Now, the shop, Steve, as we know, opens on Wednesday and runs through till Friday. It was open on Monday. And I'm like, oh, God. So I went in there and I said, have you got any play dates? Said, yeah. And I said, oh, how did they do? She said, well, they only arrived at 3 o'clock today. We bought 300 and we've sold 40 of them. I'm like, okay, great. Best have one then.
Mm.
So I've got a play date. And they became a little badge, of the cool kids at GDC.
Really?
And this is how cool they are, is that, because you can just slip them in your pocket and just play some cool indie games while you're waiting. So I was sort of showing mine off whenever I had the opportunity to. Bithel already had one.
Of course he did.
It was in his top pocket. I said, oh, look, I've got one of these. And he went, one of these. And he removed it from his top pocket. and we talked about that sort of stuff. Who else did I say? Yeah, so walking around the expo, seemed a little less busy than previous years, and less experimental. In fact, some of the stuff we'd seen previously was back on the show floor, but nothing as unique as the sort of VR flying thing that we stumbled across one year. And that's the thing, is while you're out there, is that these photo services keep reminding you of the stuff you were doing in previous years. You know, oh yeah, that was cool. Tat-wise, Epic were doing the Fortnite Llama in Lego decks. So there was a a giant llama modeled out of Lego on their stand, and then you could pick up a little llama model in Lego, which I picked up for Dexter. I could only get one. Apologies, Simon. I also had to use a grabber machine to get a TikTok gaming pin for Dexter.
Okay.
Which took, I was worried I was going to be there for a while. I only took a couple of minutes. But my followers on Twitter will have noticed that I didn't debase myself for a pair of augmented VR glasses bag, which I could have done, but I didn't. But yeah, overall, really nice to see people, bump into people not seen for ages. Frank from the Video Game History Organization.
Yeah.
He looked at me and he said, I know you, don't I? And I said, yeah. And I had to give him some context. I said, oh, yeah, I do One Life Left with Steve. He said, oh, that's right. I saw Bithel. Yeah, bumping into lots of people. All good times.
What was the vibe like? Because obviously the games industry is not in a great state right at the moment. And there's a bit of dissonance there with everyone descending on a city for what usually is a week, of parties and good times. I assume there was a lot of conversation about redundancies.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I wasn't there for this moment, but there was an organized scream in the park where devs could just went and screamed, given sort of everything that's going on. Not just the redundancies, but there's a rising hostility coming back, which is horrible to see. So the weather was good and it was quite nice in that park, and the park was busy all the time, and that's where the sort of real indies hang out. And there was generally a sense of, what can you do? You have to roll with it this year and hope that things return. And a lot of people were talking about the faith they had in brighter times ahead. I met up with, we talked about them, the guys who made Deliver Us the Moon and Deliver Us Mars. I had some donuts with them. They were part of a wider group in the park, and they were just doing what they could to try and get out there. And so I don't know, I mean it wasn't it wasn't the happiest of GDCs, but there were a lot of people there, and there was still a sense of community and shared knowledge that I don't think you get anywhere else, certainly in that scale. But yeah, absolutely a sense that we're not quite out of the woods yet either.
Okay, good. Thank you for the updates.
7 out of 10.
While you were away, we did a Mariachi show for Resonance as well on Friday night. It was great. Thank you all so much for coming and for donating your time and your money to Resonance. We had a great time. I sang a song about Black Diamond, which meant okay. I stealth dropped it with a QR code on screen.
Nice.
I think it's the first ever game that's ever been launched via a karaoke parody song, as far as I'm aware. Slightly screwed up the launch because I put a QR code on screen for people to take a picture of during the instrumental break, but unfortunately the instrumental break bar came up across the QR code.
Excellent.
No launches excellent. Without a hitch.
Indeed.
It was a great night. Thank you for coming along. Thank you for supporting Resonance. If you want to support Resonance more, and you should, go to their website, resonancefm.com. There's all kinds of ways you can support them there. It's time for the reviews. Simon.
Hello.
What have you been playing? I mean, first, let you know, I've been playing very, very little, so take as long as you want to tell us about your play date and the things you played on the way to, way back from GDC.
Well, on the flight, I'd loaded up my ROG Ally and ticked a few things off, highlight of which was the Jeff Minter collection from Digital Eclipse, it's so good, Steve. It's a compendium of Jeff's work, most of his games across loads of different formats, but with lots of historical pieces and archives that place context to Jeff and his work. I tell you what, Steve, I don't think I've ever met Jeff Minter. But I'm well aware of him, and I know what he looks like. But the way that he's presented in this collection he's sexy. He's sexy in a way I've not seen him before.
Okay.
Maybe it was just an emotional time when you're 35,000 feet above the Atlantic. But it's brilliant, and they've got some new interviews. Nice to see Gary Penn pop up there. Gary Lydon's in it. Gary Witter. In fact, you have to be a Gary, it seems, isn't it? Being the Jeff in the Jeff Compendium. That was great. So I think, appealing to me, a man of a certain age and who was buying games around that time, it's great to be able to dip in and out of these games and play them along Jeff's timeline. I'm not certain that you'll be playing them for long, but I do think it's an incredibly important piece of software and absolutely deserves to be supported.
I love the way they've done a brilliant job. Yeah, all of the stuff that they've done, Digital Eclipse and the Game History Foundation.
I think they're the most important company in video games at the moment, actually.
I
genuinely do. So that was good, 7 out of 10. I continued, I'd played some of it prior to Christmas, but I continued playing American Arcadia, which I've not mentioned on the show. Which is it's the Truman Show, the video game, in a way that, so it's a 2.5D side scroller like Braid and like Planet, I forgot what it's called, like all of them. Mm-hmm. But whereas most of them are sort of dark and somber and don't have much by the way of sort of actual language, this is a genuinely funny take on the Truman Show style plot, which fuses simple 2.5 platforming and puzzles and action sequences with a companion viewpoint, which is all in first person. So you alternate between protagonists, and it's excellent. It's just really, really good, funny. Not too difficult, not too taxing. You know, there are moments where you'll have to repeat the same checkpoint and all of that sort of stuff, but never too difficult. Really enjoying that, 7 out of 10. And so I got...
No, I was just going to say, I've been playing WarioWare, the one that I bought in Japan. 1-2
Is that its official name?
No, it's not. Yeah, WarioWare, the one that I bought in Japan. It's not 1-2 Switch. That's the other thing I bought in Japan. WarioWare,
get it together or keep it together, something like that, isn't it?
It's not the new one though. I think it's the one before that. Anyway, okay. It's very surprised to see that series has moved on from the the fast-paced mini games into a. Oh, now you play as a series of characters and they all have different abilities, which then you control those characters inside the mini games. So it's quite clever. Playing that seems good. Want to go back to it. 7 out of 10. And that is it for me. Oh, Animal Crossing, playing that with Alice, guiding her through that, finding it quite frustrating. Oh, can I buy those peaches from the shop? No, you've already got peaches on your island. You don't need to pay 400 bells per peach. You just sold peaches to the shop for 100 bells. That makes no sense. But I want to. It's your money. Okay, I'm going to buy the peaches. Fine, buy the peaches. Anyway, 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. And then, yes, the playdate has been brilliant. Like in the way that if a Steam Deck is... to play PC games, the playdate is like the itch.io deck is how I'm describing it. And what's been really interesting, and we will cover the games in more depth as they arrive, is that at its best, so there are some more in-depth games. You go, oh, this is a classic Zelda game or whatever that you can download from the store, you can play, you can sideload via itch, and all that stuff is handled really well. Those meatier games that I think don't work particularly well, it's the single mechanic games that I'm enjoying, the sort of high score chasing ones. And what was really interesting was that yesterday I was Dexter came over, so Dexter and Ramona, 15 and 6 year old respectively, I showed it to Dexter thinking he'd have no interest in it, and he went, oh, have you got the game where you can pour drinks for bears? And I was like, how do you know about that? He said, oh, I've seen it on TikTok. And so we did that and we played it, and then he was enjoying that and Ramona was enjoying that. And then there's another sort of super hexagon style game, which is, I don't know, $2 or $3. I've got a score of 54 that Ramona got. It's hard. It's exactly like Super Hexagon in terms of, fast paced, fail, start again, fast paced, blah, 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 pulsating soundtrack. She got incredibly into, and she's got a score of 6, which is really good. No, she went up to 8, which is really good for. And so, yeah, I was surprised that maybe it was just the sort of tactile nature of it. Anyway, I'm looking forward to getting properly stuck in with it. But yeah, lovely piece of kit, 7 out of 10.
Fabulous. And that is the end of the show. Really, really good to be back, Simon. Although we're not back for very long, are we?
We're not. No, we're off next week because it's Easter Monday, innit?
Easter Monday next week. But we will see you all in 2 weeks. Thank you so much to Resonance FM for hosting. Thanks to everybody here for listening. But until next week, goodbye.
Goodbye.